Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop, and I am here today in Arizona, in Tucson, and I'm with Jeff Pervat. He's the Deputy Director of Treatment, Research, and Innovation for Pima County. Jeff, thanks for letting me come visit you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm just fascinated by water in the desert. It's just such an interesting idea on how you get the water, how you treat the water, how you provide the water, how you conserve the water. Tell me just about Pima County and about the Tucson area, you know, the climate, the water, the place.
Sure. So Tucson, Arizona is in the southern half of the state. We call this the Sonoran Desert. It's right along the border with Mexico. And as you'll see out today, it's probably going to be 95 degree temperature today.
Not bad.
I think we were at 102 last week. So we are definitely in the desert. You see a lot of saguaro cactus and a lot of sand.
Yeah.
Predominantly, the water here in the southern Arizona is groundwater driven. We have very few running streams at all. So it's a groundwater-based system. And so we pull that water out of the ground, treat it, and distribute it. About 60 years ago, some real smart folks decided that we could augment the Colorado River water. And so we built the Central Arizona Project Canal. That brings water all the way from the western half of the state on the border with California through Lake Havasu, 331 miles here to Tucson.
Wow.
Stops along the way in Phoenix. And so we treat that water and distribute it as well. Or here in Tucson, we actually do groundwater recharge with that water and pull it back out and treat it.
What's the state of your groundwater? How is the supply looking?
Quite improved now compared to what it was 15 years ago. 15 years ago, we were a groundwater-based community. Mm-hmm. And we were rapidly depleting our groundwater supply, probably about 10 foot a year. And so the elevation of groundwater. And so about 15 years ago is when the CAP canal finally got that last leg that brought it to Tucson. Mm-hmm. And so we reversed that trend. Now we're almost 80% CAP water and maybe 20% groundwater. Okay. We also take advantage of extensive water reuse here in Arizona. So, for example, the treatment plant right next door to us, that's a 32 million gallon a day facility, Agua Nueva. That water gets distributed to 18 golf courses, 65 schools, and 50 parks all around town and roadway medians. And so all those turf irrigation sources, we reuse reclaimed water.
And how much are you putting back in the groundwater?
So the other discharge goes into the Santa Cruz River, which used to be a flowing river, probably around 1912. It ceased to because of groundwater pumping. And so our effluent from our two major facilities here in Tucson, they make up the Santa Cruz River.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so we probably put in about 40 million gallons a day back in the river.
You know, the Colorado River is one of the most scrutinized or, you know, high-profile rivers where all these different states and cities are kind of getting their allocations out of that, and people are watching the levels in Lake Mead and so forth. So what's your all's mindset on Colorado River, its future, you know, if those levels drop, if allocations get cut back, kind of what's your approach or your backup plan there?
So we're banking water. We're banking water in the ground for groundwater recharge. But what we're hoping is if Lake Mead does drop below 1075, we hope it doesn't happen. But if it does happen, it's more momentary. So it's a shortened drought and those water levels are recovered and we'll go back to normal operation. But part of the Water Innovation Challenge project, that was precisely its topic, was to look in the future, 30, 50 years out, and say, what is Arizona going to do for their next source of water? Should Lake Mead have a prolonged drought? And we start rationing water along the Colorado. And so that was the basis of our project where we pitched potable reuse. Mm-hmm. So reusing the water within your community. And just like you mentioned, all these eight other states that are lobbying for the Colorado River water, the beauty of DPR is it keeps those decisions local. Independent of other states and other states' desires on your water supply, it keeps all those decision-making processes a local entity.
what's kind of the status or the future of direct potable reuse? I mean, I know that there's a lot going on. There's places, Arizona, California, Colorado are really starting to take a look at letting this happen. Just kind of what's going on from your perspective?
I think we've just really seen the tip of the iceberg for potable reuse. When you look at water sources and availability, it's the lowest hanging fruit. It's the most easily accessed water available for purification. If you're going to import water, like we've done with the CAP or like LA or Mexico City, importing water, it's a massive expense and you have to move it for quite huge distances, plus the energy involved in that. If you look at desalination like they use on the coast, that's a horribly energy intensive process. It works well if you're a coastal community. If you're inland, what do you do with that brine? And so most of the DPR projects that you see nationwide, people are jumping on the bandwagon. I think the citizenry has kind of come to acknowledge that it can be done. It can be done safely. And so they're amenable to it. But almost all instances, we use some kind of form of nanofiltration, ultrafiltration, or reverse osmosis. Reverse osmosis still has a lot of brine reject. So what do you do with that? It's a byproduct you have to deal with. So I think the future of potable reuse, you'll see a lot more front-end technologies, maybe biological active filters, and other processes, pre-treatment up front to make it less dependent on an RO-based technological solution.
A little story. I was taking an evening hike outside of Phoenix yesterday, and I just ran into a random guy on the top of the mountain, and he's like, "What are you doing here?" I've talked about water, and he said, "Oh, like reclaimed water." And so this regular citizen knew the term. You know, I think they're pretty educated, and he knew that they used it for irrigation and so forth. And I talked about the idea of using it for drinking water. And he had a, you know, "Oh, gross" reaction, right? Like, "I don't know if I would do that." And I just explained technology is amazing. It's cleaner than, you know, what's coming out of your tap. And then he kind of like had a moment where he said, "Yeah, I guess there's no new water on Earth. So it's all been used a bunch of times before." I mean, that's what this just regular guy said to me. I was like, "You get it." And so I think that's kind of, let's go with the innovation challenge, because I think that's kind of what you all were trying to do there, is that public awareness and the acceptance piece. So what happened with the Arizona Innovation Challenge with water?
Our primary goal was to introduce this concept, to demonstrate people that it could be done safely, and it could be done reliably, and to get that ADQ to rescind that prohibition and grant that first permit. So that was our project. And so we knew we'd have one chance to do this right. If we did it wrong, it was going to set back legislation for another decade. And so we were overly conservative. We had a great team. It involved Pima County, Tucson Water, Marana Water, University of Arizona, and our engineering consulting firms of CH2M and Corello Engineers. And so we designed it in a shipping container, a semi, that we could take to each different community. So we could take it right to your hometown. You could walk through. You could tour the truck. And if you look inside of it, it looks clinical, clean, like a laboratory in there. We wanted everybody that came through to be able to touch it, feel it, taste it, and experience it for themselves. So they walked away with a reassurance that, you know, my utility is doing a great job and I have confidence in it.
So you built this trailer, this big truck, got mobile treatment center, really. And then you went around the state, and so who did you work with? What was the fun angle here?
Well, the best part was the people that you knew along the way. So we divided the state up into three regions, the northern half, the central Phoenix Valley, and then southern Arizona. And so we set out to recruit cities, and they would sponsor community outreach events. And so they were having a 4th of July or a parade or some type of an event that would allow our big trailer to come. We would come there. We would open it up, bring tours through there, serve water to help deliver the message, because water's not, it's exciting to us, but it's not sexy to most people. And so to get them to come out to the trailer, we would recruit brewers. Craft brewing industry is booming nationwide.
Yeah.
And so we recruited commercial craft brewers to use our water and brew craft beer to help demonstrate it. And to our surprise, they're some of the most savvy environmental stewards out there. And so they really jumped at the opportunity. They were eager to work with us. It's a fun project. And so we got corporate sponsors that donated a lot of the equipment in the truck. Really, vendors and manufacturers of equipment And so we plastered their names and logos on the side of the trailer. It looks like a NASCAR type semi. And oddly enough, when we went to Dow, was one of our sponsors. They sponsored the number 3 old Dale Earnhardt car, which is now driven by Austin Dillon, uh-huh. who won the Daytona 500 this year, actually.
Wow.
We went to the races, and I ended up sitting next to Roger Penske, and we told about our project. Penske donated the cab that towed our trailer around for the entire year.
So no way.
It was such a fun project. Everybody we ran into wanted to be part of it, and how could we help out? So that was, so in addition to the $250,000 grant that we won for the challenge, we probably got at least $700,000 in sponsorships and everything to really make it happen. That's what made it a fun project.
Yeah, and you had, I think, like 26 brewers ended up being part of this March Madness-style tournament where they all brewed a beer, and then at the Reuse Symposium last year, kind of had a big tasting and announced the winner and all that.
Yeah, you were there at that tasting. It was packed.
Packed.
It was standing room only. I think we had to pull a ladder out and put Chan up on the ladder when they announced who the winner was. There was no room to stand.
Yeah.
It was very popular. And oddly enough, the brewer that won was a local Tucson brewer, Dragoon Brewery, and the beer that they made was a Pilsner. And normally, beer aficionados would think Pilsner, that's kind of a bland beer. That's like a Budweiser or a Coors. But the reason they chose to make that style of a beer was because here in Arizona, because we are groundwater-based and Colorado River-based, and that water's coming from Lake Mead down the Colorado, then across the state here, it evaporates along the way. So the TDS, total dissolved solids in that water, typically our water here in Tucson or throughout the state ranges between 500 to almost some places 900 TDS. Mm. And so you cannot make a Pilsner with that type of a water hardness. And so they took advantage of that, and they made a clear water Pilsner. They used our water, which has a TDS of 10. And so they made an ultra-pure water that you can't get a Pilsner made in Arizona anywhere because of our water hardness. And so they really took advantage of that cleanliness to start from scratch.
And I think that's another reason that the brewers are a great partner is these guys are, you know, they're like water chemists, right? They understand everything that's going on in that water, and they have to craft their beers based on the water they have. And I've heard that they're excited to have kind of this blank slate where they can work with and create and so forth.
It creates all sorts of opportunities that they normally wouldn't be able to attempt.
Yeah. I guess one of the big benefits of this Arizona Pure Water Brew Challenge is there was tons of media coverage. So this is popping up in front of the public's face in the press and on social media and so forth. So it's building that awareness about the ability to take water, reuse it, and drink it.
Yeah, we've been on Fox News, CNN, Bill Nye, the science guy. We've been on multiple television shows and radio shows. It's a fun, catchy kind of topic, and so it spreads like wildfire.
Those of us, we're kind of involved at WEF with this Pure Water Brewing Alliance, which is just trying to coordinate with everybody out there that's doing this stuff. And we're all excited. And I think maybe some people are like, what are you doing? You're just playing around with beer here as part of your work. But there's a total legitimacy to this with proving water reuse technology, building public awareness. I mean, that's really the end goal. The beer is just a great vehicle.
The beer is a wonderful vehicle because it invokes that curiosity where people want and they hear about it and they say, what are you doing? And they want to listen to the story.
Yeah.
And maybe they taste it. And realistically, in the crowds that we circulate with, we go to conferences, we pass out water, but we're kind of water wonks, water nerds. We have our little clique of groups that we interact with. Reaching out to the brewers let us reach the general public and a whole audience that we would normally never be exposed
sure,
to.
Sure, sure. Let's shift gears a little bit here and talk about this facility that we're sitting in, because it's really incredible. We are at the WEST Center, which stands for Water and Energy Sustainable Technology Center. And this is the description I've seen is it's this new state-of-the-art facility, just really kind of expanded and opened a couple years ago. It's within Pima County's water reclamation facility, Agua Nuevo. I love that name, new water there. Even the road that comes in, right, is Calle Agua Nueva. So that's great. Talk about this facility. We just got to take a tour through here. It's incredible.
So I'm really pleased that we had a forward-thinking organization because originally, we had a treatment plant that was next door, Roger Road. It was built in 1942. It was built when this was the outskirts of town, farmland, and it had no odor control. It's a trickling filter facility. And as you can see, we're kind of in the middle. The city's engulfed around us. And that plant had It had no odor control. So for 60, almost 70 years, it smelled 24 hours a day. Mm. And so when people used to joke when we go from Phoenix, they'd say we're going to Tucson, they'd say, oh, plug your nose, because you drive right along the interstate past this facility. So when we decided to finally close that facility down and build something new, the Agua Nueva facility, we thought, well, let's do something good for the community and give back. And so we decided to build a water campus to really highlight that old smelly plant that people had been accustomed to in town, it's gone. This is a new age. This is new water. And highlight the purity of water. So we built this water campus. And this houses our regulatory compliance groups, our pre-treatment folks, and our laboratory. And it's one of the nicest laboratories I've ever been in.
Yeah.
And then we partnered with the University of Arizona. The Agua Nueva facility, it's a public-private partnership. So CH2M Hill operates that facility for us. They were the design engineers as well. And so we took advantage of that momentum, and we went ahead and built this West Center. In the University of Arizona, they do high-end water quality research. So if you're at the graduate level in the College of Engineering, College of Ag, College of Sciences, this is where some of that research happens. And we, to make it even more unique, we built a high bay facility. Mm-hmm. It's 5,000 square feet of industrial space where vendors can come in and beta test the next generation products. Mm-hmm. So as you saw in there, we have all this cutting-edge research going on in that facility. It's heated and it's cooled 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So it allows them to do real-world analytics on an industrial scale. If you think about most universities that are doing this type of work, they have to leave campus, come out to their wastewater utility, and fetch water. 50-gallon drum of water, that's a few hundred pounds.
Heavy.
They've got to bring it back to campus. That's a task in itself. Here we have continuous feed of water coming from the treatment plant into the building. So they can take projects from concept bench scale all the way to 500,000 gallon a day pilot scale. And if we want to expand it beyond that, we'll move the project right next door to the treatment plant. So that's really what the water campus is about, is bridging that energy water nexus public-private partnership and really trying to advance utility of the future.
Well, like you mentioned, utility of the future, you're sitting here and you've got the banner, you know, how you were named one of the Utility of the Future Today facilities. So, and I guess it's really exciting for the University of Arizona, you know, from a programmatic standpoint, for them to be able to offer this type of research opportunity to students.
Yeah, they basically, we built a sandbox that nobody else has. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of our options is we're trying to brand it as the Southwest Water Campus, because we'd like to partner with ASU, Colorado, New Mexico. We've got this great facility and sandbox here. Come play.
Yeah.
Come bring your research. Let's partner. Let's advance our industry together.
All right. Well, let's get a little more technical and wonky for a second and go back to your bay that you mentioned, because you walked me through there and there's a dizzying array of impressive stuff happening. So could you rattle off a little bit about what's going on? I think the listeners will appreciate hearing some of that.
Sure. So we have a large skid that's doing direct potable reuse, nanofiltration, and RO, just like in the beer truck with a scaled up version. We'll do up to 20, 30 gallons a minute through that process, whereas our trailer here was only doing 3 gallons a minute. We also have DPR projects from Xylem in there. We have processes of nanofiltration, ultrafiltration, reverse osmosis, UV, ozone, GAC, zero discharge. We have an NSF project that we're working on right now for Animox. Mm. We're looking at both granular Animox and MBBR type Animox. 4 applications for real world, you know, mainstream and side stream treatment. We just have a variety of different projects going in there, and they're always changing. We have ceramic membranes from Japan going on in there for the last year as well.
Yeah, and you've had visitors from around the world coming in to see what's happening in there.
Exactly.
What's kind of next? What do you know? This has just been kind of open for 2 years, so you're really kind of getting things going. Do you have any, you know, future projects or things you're kind of on the horizon?
So we continually have at least 20 vendors coming to us on a regular basis wanting to get space in that high bay. And so that's our challenge right now, is trying to really set our vision, saying, are we going to be water the future DPR project? Are we going to look at water energy nexus? Where is our core focus going to be? Mm-hmm. And how can we fit all those in there? There may be a West too.
You know,
tailor to the needs of our industry is what we're trying to do and advance that technology.
Well, one of the things I saw in that bay was a little bit of a pallet of these bottles of water here, AZ Pure. And I think this is some of the water that was used in the challenge. So it's advanced purified water sourced from the Agua Nueva Water Reclamation Facility. And it's got a nice graphic on the side that shows kind of the steps of ultrafiltration, reverse osmosis, UV advanced oxidation, granular activated carbon, and the chlorine disinfection. So this is some clean, pure stuff in here. I actually have an open mind, so I need to go ahead and do that now. And yep, tastes like good water. Absolutely.
Travis, I can guarantee this is the purest water you'll ever drink. And we have all the data to prove it.
Yeah, yeah.
We did over almost 4,000 analyses during this 5-month period demonstrating the purity of that treatment process. Mm. So this is the most analyzed, scrutinized water that I've ever been a part of.
It honestly just tastes great. I like the whatever the level of softness and hardness is in there. It's just awesome. Great, great water. Jeff, thank you very much for the conversation and the tour and all the time.
Thank you.
Words on Water.